Two decisions, one boardroom. In the first, the directors spend a careful two-week review with outside advisors, none of them conflicted, and bet the company on a new product line. It flops. In the second, a director approves a supply contract with a company she secretly owns, and that contract turns out to be a sound deal for the corporation. Which of them is liable? The second, the one whose deal worked, because the first was a care problem, and the law forgives honest mistakes of judgment. The second was a loyalty problem, and the law does not forgive secret self-interest, however well it turned out. Hold that asymmetry. Care is protectable. Loyalty is not. Here is the root. First the two duties, and the good faith running through both. Then the same skeleton in three business forms. Partners, where the duties are listed exhaustively and the care standard is forgiving. Corporations, where the business judgment rule does the heavy lifting. And limited liability companies, where the real question is, who owes any duty at all? Two duties do almost all the work here. The duty of care asks how well you did the job. Did you inform yourself and act with the diligence a reasonable person in your position would use? The duty of loyalty asks whom you served. Did you act for the business or quietly serve yourself? A breach of care is carelessness. A breach of loyalty is a conflict of interest. And courts guard loyalty far more strictly than care. The law tolerates honest mistakes of judgment. It does not tolerate secret self-interest. That is why care breaches are often excused by the business judgment rule or by a clause in the charter, while loyalty breaches almost never are. Good faith is the glue running through both, and modern law treats bad faith as a form of disloyalty. That matters because loyalty violations get no protection. Three business forms, one skeleton. A general partnership under the revised Uniform Partnership Act, a corporation under the Model Business Corporation Act, and a limited liability company under the Uniform Limited Liability Company Act. Learn them side by side and you see the same bones three times. Partners first. Every partner is an agent who can bind the firm and reach its assets, so each is a fiduciary of the partnership and of the other partners. What makes partnership law distinctive is that Section 404 lists the duties exhaustively. Loyalty and care are the only fiduciary duties a partner owes, so a court cannot invent extra ones. The duty of loyalty is three specific commands. 1. Account for secret gains. Turn over to the firm and hold as trustee any profit you pocket from partnership business, from using its property, or from taking a partnership opportunity. 2. No adverse dealing. Do not deal with the partnership on behalf of anyone whose interests clash with the firm's. 3. No competing while the firm is a going concern, which lifts only on dissolution. Watch it work. Rosa and Tam are partners in a firm that renovates apartment buildings. A broker offers the firm a prime building, and Rosa quietly buys it for herself and keeps the profit. A taken partnership opportunity. She must account to the firm and hold the gain as trustee. Now suppose instead she opens a competing renovation business on the side. That is the no competition command. The duty of care, by contrast, is deliberately forgiving. A partner is liable only for gross negligence, recklessness, intentional misconduct, or a knowing violation of law. Ordinary carelessness is not a breach. So, if Rosa makes a sloppy but honest error estimating renovation costs and the firm loses money, there is no breach of care at all. Can partners rewrite this by agreement? Partly. Under Section 103, the agreement may tailor the duties, but may not eliminate loyalty outright. It may identify specific categories of permitted conduct if they are not manifestly unreasonable, and the partners may authorize a conflict after full disclosure. it may not unreasonably reduce care and may not eliminate good faith. Now the corporation. Directors set policy and oversee the business. Officers run operations. Both are fiduciaries of the corporation and, through it, of its shareholders. Under Section 8.30, directors must act in good faith and in a manner they reasonably believe serves the corporation's best interests. In becoming informed, they must use the care a person in a like position would reasonably believe appropriate. But notice a gap that decides cases. There is the standard of conduct, how directors should behave, and the standard of liability, when they can be made to pay. A director can fall short of the ideal and still owe nothing. To pin damages on a decision, a challenger must show more than a bad outcome: bad faith, a failure to be reasonably informed, a disqualifying conflict, an improper personal benefit, or a persistent failure at oversight. That gap is what the business judgment rule fills. It is a presumption. When directors make a business decision, they are presumed to have acted on an informed basis, in good faith, and believing it served the corporation. If the presumption holds, no court second guesses the decision, even a disaster. Judges are not business experts. Hindsight is unfair, and the law wants boards to take risks. Because it is only a presumption, a plaintiff can rebut it. Gross negligence in becoming informed, a care problem. A conflict or lack of independence, a loyalty problem. An improper purpose or knowingly breaking the law, a good faith problem. Or no real decision at all. And notice what the rule never does. It presupposes a disinterested, informed, good faith decision, so it never shields self-dealing. Rebut it, and the deferential rule flips to the most demanding standard in corporate law: entire fairness. The burden shifts to the fiduciary to prove the transaction was entirely fair, and courts examine two things together. Fair dealing looks at process, how the deal was timed, negotiated, structured, and disclosed. Fair price looks at the economics, both together. The most heavily tested loyalty application is the conflicting interest transaction. A deal between the corporation and one of its directors, or the director's close relative, or a company the director controls. It is not automatically void. The law provides safe harbors that cleanse the conflict, provided the director comes clean. Under Section 8.60, any one of three things saves it. 1. After the director discloses the conflict and the material facts, approval by a majority of the qualified directors, meaning the disinterested ones, at least 2. 2. After the same disclosure, approval by a majority of votes cast by disinterested shareholders. 3. The transaction was fair when entered into. Disclosure is the price of the first 2. A close cousin is usurping a corporate opportunity. Whether one belongs to the corporation turns on a few overlapping questions. Is it in the corporation's line of business? Did the corporation have an existing interest or expectancy? Did it come to the person because of the position or through corporate resources? If so, present it there first. And Section 8.70 supplies a safe harbor. Bring the opportunity to the corporation before you become legally obligated on it. Then, have the qualified directors or the shareholders disclaim the corporation's interest after disclosure. Do that, and you may pursue it personally, free of liability. Good faith is the connective tissue, and modern law treats a lack of it as a breach of loyalty. Bad faith means more than a poor decision. It means acting for a purpose other than the corporation's welfare, knowingly breaking the law, or consciously disregarding a known duty. and this is where the duty of oversight lives. Directors must make a good faith effort to put a reasonable monitoring system in place and must not ignore red flags once it surfaces them. Oversight claims are hard to win because the plaintiff must show a conscious failure, not mere ineffectiveness. But they are a favorite fact pattern. A company implodes in a scandal the board was never watching for. Officers owe the same trio, plus one duty directors do not carry. A duty to keep the board informed, passing up material information and reporting likely material violations of law or of duty. Courts are also more cautious about extending the full business judgment rule to officers, who are hands-on managers rather than part-time overseers. Now, the classic trap, and it ties the topic together. A corporation may put a clause in its articles eliminating directors' personal liability for money damages from a breach of the duty of care. But that clause can never reach a breach of loyalty, nor acts not in good faith, intentional misconduct, a knowing violation of law, an improper personal benefit, or unlawful distributions. In plain terms, careless fiduciaries can be forgiven in advance. Disloyal ones cannot, which is our opening asymmetry written into the corporate charter itself. Which brings us to the limited liability company, where the first question is not what the duties are, but who owes them at all. A company is either member-managed, where the owners run it like partners, or manager-managed, where they appoint managers and the other members are passive investors. Member-managed is the default, unless the operating agreement chooses otherwise. The duties track partnership law almost exactly. Under Section 409, loyalty means account for secret gains, no adverse dealing, and no competing before dissolution. Care means refrain from gross negligence, recklessness, intentional misconduct, or a knowing violation of law. But structure decides who carries them. In a manager-managed company, the duties fall on the managers, and a member who is not a manager owes neither duty merely by being a member. Harbor Ventures is manager-managed. Nadia is the appointed manager. Owen is a passive member who put in cash and has no management role. Nadia steers a lucrative supply deal to a business she secretly owns. Loyalty breach, and she accounts for the profit. Owen opens a competing business on the side and owes nothing because he is a non-managing member. Flip the company to member-managed, and Owen's side business breaches the no competition rule. One caution, and it is the sharp edge of that rule. If a non-managing member actually exercises management functions, duties attach to that conduct. Form does not immunize someone who is really running things. And under Section 105, the operating agreement has broad freedom to tailor duties, but it may not eliminate loyalty or care outright, and can never eliminate good faith. A word on authorities, because this episode named no cases, and that was deliberate. Next-gen questions hand you a partner, a director, or a manager who did something, and ask which duty is in play and whether anything protects them. They will not ask for case names. And all three subtopics are starred, so no statute is coming. If you keep only three, keep these. Section 404, the partner's three loyalty commands and the gross negligence floor on care, the business judgment rule and its three conflict safe harbors, disinterested directors, disinterested shareholders, or fairness, and Section 409's member-managed versus manager-managed switch, which decides who owes anything at all. Now the traps, straight from the examiner's favorites list. 1. Applying an ordinary negligence standard to partners and members. Their care duty has a gross negligence floor, so a merely careless partner is not liable. 2. Thinking the business judgment rule protects self-dealing. It never does. It presupposes a disinterested, informed, good-faith decision, and a conflict pushes you straight to entire fairness. 3. Forgetting that disclosure unlocks the safe harbors. A director who discloses and obtains disinterested approval is protected. One who hides the conflict must prove entire fairness and must prove both halves, fair dealing and fair price. 4. Misreading the management structure. A non-managing member of a manager-managed company generally owes nothing and may compete. 5. Assuming a charter exculpation clause forgives everything. It forgives care, never loyalty, bad faith, or an improper personal benefit. 6. Filing good faith and oversight under the duty of care. Modern law treats bad faith as disloyalty, which is exactly why it cannot be exculpated. That is not a technicality. It is the reason the classification matters. Time for the quick check, straight from the BARGO question bank. Beacon Bay is a manager-managed company. On paper, Theo is a non-managing member with no formal role. In practice, he has taken over operations. He negotiates the major contracts, directs the spending, and makes the key decisions, while the nominal manager defers to him entirely. Theo then steers a lucrative contract to a firm he secretly owns. The other members sue, and Theo argues that as a mere non-managing member, he owes no fiduciary duties. Is he likely to escape liability on that argument? Option 1. Yes, because the operating agreement designates him a non-managing member. Option 2. No, because every member owes fiduciary duties regardless of role. Option 3. No, because duties attach to a member who exercises management functions. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 3. Formal labels do not immunize someone who is really running the company. The default rule is real, and we covered it. A non-managing member of a manager-managed company owes no fiduciary duties. But that protection assumes the member is actually passive. Theo ran the company, so the duties attached to that conduct. Notice that the two wrong answers fail in opposite directions. Option 1 treats the paper designation as conclusive, but substance controls over form. Option 2 overcorrects, because not every member owes duties in a manager-managed company. Theo owes them because he exercised management, not because he is a member. Function, not title. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each with every option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. Care asks how well you did the job. Loyalty asks whom you served, and courts guard loyalty far more strictly. 2. Partners and members answer only for gross negligence, recklessness, intentional misconduct, or a knowing violation of law. 3. The business judgment rule presumes an informed, good-faith, disinterested decision. A conflict destroys it and sends you to entire fairness, which needs fair dealing and fair price together. 4. Disclosure plus disinterested approval cleanses a conflict, and so does proving the deal was fair. 5. For a company, ask who is managing before you ask what is owed, which is why our two directors part ways. One lost the shareholders' money and walks. The other made them money and pays. Nothing about the outcomes explains that. Everything about the conflict does. Next time, shareholder and member litigation. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.